Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Paul and Dave. And today we have episode 8 of season 2 of the Disney Plus series, The Mandalorian. This episode is going to be chapter 16 entitled The Rescue. And before we get going here, I do want to acknowledge, are we a month late on this coverage? Absolutely we are, but we are a brand new podcast. We are still learning the ropes. I hope that you guys are learning with us. We had some technical difficulties, the holiday, some conflicting schedules. These are all excuses, but whatever. You're going to get it. You're going to love it because we are finally getting to sink our teeth into this episode, and it was the best of the series.
This will be the second time we run through it, but we'll be just as excited, if not more.
Yeah, I just rewatched the episode for probably the fifth time last night in preparation to redo this episode. With this, like Paul said, this is our second time recording this. It's still awesome. The magic's still there. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll get into it later. But like, this is, yeah, like you said, the best episode of the season. And I'm honestly, even if it is the second time, just so excited to keep talking about it. Honestly,
one of the best Star Wars moments in Star Wars history. So
yeah. Definitely in recent history.
I would put it up there for all of Star Wars history.
Definitely. I'm trying to think of even in, I think it's up there with Obi-Wan Anakin lightsaber duel, like the Luke Skywalker reveal we're obviously talking about, like, and maybe the Luke Darth Maul duel in episode 1, but I'm thinking like, what else? Yeah, it's up there.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about events of recent movies or like
like what was the last iconic event as big as what happened?
Not the pod race, because
slam the pod race.
I liked it, but it was a little out of left field for
it
me.
Also didn't have to encompass like an hour of the plot.
Exactly, but it's still cool as hell.
Yeah,
that's where we get Jabulba, or what's it? What's his name?
Jar Jar Binks.
No,
it's the Jabulba. It's something like that.
Jabulba, Kabulba. God damn.
We're gonna get torched for that one.
But whatever.
Limo, dude.
We got that, and we got the blue trunked floaty guy. We're off track.
Yeah, we're off track. I do love that we always bring it back to Phantom Menace, because Paul, you have such a soft spot in your heart for the Phantom Menace.
I also don't mind the Phantom Menace either, because that was like honestly what probably got me hooked when I was like a literal child into Star Wars was that pod race.
Yeah, I mean the fight between Obi-Wan and Anakin in Revenge of the Sith.
It's like the first time I've seen like a character die in a movie, and I'm like 8-6 years old, whatever it is.
Who died?
Oh, not the first one. Sorry, we're talking about the Phantom Menace. I'm thinking of
someone dies in the Phantom Menace.
Qui-Gon Jinn. I was talking about Revenge of the Sith.
My bad. Sorry. I just heard Phantom Menace. I was like, oh, I like it. No, but
Padme dies in Revenge of the Sith.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
She got the big sad.
All right, Mando, let's go.
Yes, let's go. Okay, so we got our cold opening, as always, and it's getting right into the action. We have the Slave One is firing on a ship, and we find out that it is Dr. Pershing, who we know, and the ship is a Lambda-class Imperial shuttle. It's very iconic, like we all have seen this ship before. So it's Dr. Pershing and these two pilots, and they're kind of bantering back and forth. Nobody knows what's going on. Pershing is asking the people, you know, what do they want? And the co-pilot's being a dick right from the get-go. He says, I suggest you shut your mouth. This isn't your laboratory. Boba hits the shuttle with an ion cannon, disabling their avionics and comms. And he gets over the comms and says, lower your shields, disengage all transponders, like we're about to board you.
The Slave One, just real quick, just acting as a Batmobile here, just, you know, just pulling out all the stops just to, yeah.
It literally has like, you know, the ion cannon from like the back when you're being trailed is like the oil grease from like the Batmobile.
Yeah.
And like all these little knickknacks.
It's shown to be a very universal ship.
Why, Dave, are you ready to commit to the Slave One as our new ship over the Razor Crest? Moving on so soon.
We haven't seen the Razor Crest. We've just seen the mobility of the Razor Crest.
Dave,
we haven't
seen. You're just a slut for gyroscopics.
Yeah.
That's honestly exactly what it is. But continue, B-Toms.
Yeah. And, you know, Dr. Pershing says, well, why don't we just fight them? They're probably just pirates. And the co-pilot's like, I don't have a death wish. Like,
yeah, he does.
He totally does. Yeah, this guy's all over the place with what he's saying. But we have this awesome shot of the Slave One just like flying over the cockpit of this Lambda class shuttle. And who else boards but our boy Mando, clad in his Beskar, looking like a beast. And he enters the cockpit. And right as he's coming in, the co-pilot, who is being a jerk, has a pistol to Dr. Pershing's head and says, before you make a mistake, this is Dr. Pershing. Mando says, you know, we've met. Obviously, he has. And season one, I think, is the last time they've actually seen each other.
Might have been like episode two. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. But they have met. They have a history. He says, we've met. Immediately says, is the kid alive? Pershing says, yes, he's on the cruiser. Before he can finish what he's saying, the co-pilot grabs him. I'm sorry, this is when he gets the blaster to his head. Enter our girl, Cara Dune. And they kind of have this back and forth where it's kind of escalating situations. And this is good kind of world building and a good view of the destruction of the Death Star and of Alderaan from the eyes of someone in the Empire. But the co-pilot attempts to, or the other co-pilot attempts to defuse the situation and bargain. But the jerk co-pilot shoots that guy, which... that kind of sucks. I feel like that guy was giving them all a chance to live.
Yeah, he was the smart one.
Yeah, we're just seeing just the pure rawness and evilness of the Empire here. And it's just so... I love when they show these kinds of scenes because it's just a side of like the early Star Wars movies that we really never got to see, really. Mm-hmm. We just kind of saw the people, like, you know, controlling the Death Star, all that kind of stuff, but not those people whose reactions were like, I actually seem to enjoy doing that kind of stuff, so... Yeah. I enjoyed that. But this guy was a dick, yeah.
Yeah, this guy was a total dick. Dude, the other guy had some redeemable qualities.
Yeah, this guy, this co-pilot or pilot, he is probably the dumbest person in the Empire because it wasn't a terrible move taking Dr. Pershing hostage. But when you start insulting the person who's pointing a gun at you and saying, like, I watched your home planet blow up, like, and just continue to say the worst things you could possibly say. I was like, bro, why are you just pissing
like, even if you do somehow get out of this, like, they'll find you and just kill you.
Oh, my God.
Cara Dune was getting so heated.
B-Toms, this is a classic B-Toms quote. If he had a script of what not to say, that would have been the script, word for word.
Word for word right there. Cara Dune was getting feisty. She was definitely at any moment ready to pull the trigger, which...
Well, he was making light of the situation that your home planet got destroyed and it's because of me and my cause. Like, why would you just fan the flames of this argument? And this guy was, he was a dope.
Yeah.
But he also drops the knowledge. I think this is the first time we get Pershing's actual job title. He says, this is a top tier target of the New Republic. He is a clone engineer. So we've kind of known that clone engineering is going on. This is the first time that we get confirmation that's what Dr. Pershing is doing. He continues, you know, if they find out that he's dead because of you, you're going to wish you never left Alderaan, yada, yada, yada. We have that back and forth. This ends in our girl Cara Dune just taking this jerk out, one shot, doesn't even mind that she's got a blaster to Pershing's head.
Pershing pees a little bit. He got a little scared.
And this is just, you know, the protagonist, you know, being able to shoot things with accuracy, unlike the stormtroopers. So even with a hostage, that dude was dead on the spot.
That was also point blank range. Like, yeah, I feel it was like that wasn't a hard shot.
You could pull it off, especially if you're like already lined up the shot. Like, it, yeah, exactly. It was like 10 feet, if that, you know.
She also, in the heat of the moment, did not give a fuck or shit about Dr. Pershing. She just wanted that dude dead. And then we get our... chapter 16, The Rescue. And this one hit a little bit different. This one felt like we were in for something, and it's called The Rescue. You know, The tragedy was one thing. Now we got The Rescue. We're going to right our wrongs from the season.
We get the Slave One coming in for a landing, and boy, aren't we excited about these gyroscopics. You can actually see in this view, it's kind of cool, the wings never really rotate and they never really move up or down. So they're kind of the ones that stay still, right, and the rest of the ship like rotates around it.
That's the cockpit, baby.
It's cool.
I do miss the Razor Crest though. And also, if Boba Fett's going to be doing his own thing, like, we're going to need a new ship. Well, let's get to that later.
Well, oh my God. I can't think of what it's called now. You just said it. The
Razor Crest.
I was going to say Crescent Moon. The Razor Crest, I didn't know this, but somebody pointed out on Reddit, the exhaust fumes, when it's like landing, they show a very faint sign, like the symbol of the rebellion. Yes. In either one.
It's like an Easter egg, right?
Yeah. I was like, that's so cool.
That is dope, actually.
Moving on, though. So we have the Slave One descending onto this planet. It's like speckled with refineries all over the place. And they quote unquote park in a lot that is, if you know, you have a keen eye for this, you can tell that Bo-Katan's, it's a Com-Irk class fighter. It's called like a gauntlet starfighter. It's like a very iconic Mandalorian ship. And we all know it as Bo-Katan's is also in this parking lot. And we get Boba and Mando exit the Slave One and immediately go to the local cantina where they are met by a hush as they just kind of walk in. Mando's theme is playing and they approach Bo-Katan Kryze and Koska Reeves, who are just, you know, they're sipping on their drinks or whatever. Mando gets right down to brass tacks, says, I need your help. Bo-Katan says, not all Mandalorians are bounty hunters. Some of us serve a higher purpose. And then our boy Mando says, dude, Moff Gideon took the kid. She's like, oh, shit. Okay. She wants to help, but she just says, you'll never find him, like it's too late.
Yeah, that interaction actually it went a little bit differently, which is crazy because she says, like, somebody took the kid. She says, who? And she looks all worried. And then she goes, Mando says, Moff Gideon. Yeah. Oh, you'll never find him. Mm-hmm. So she did want to help a little bit at the beginning.
Do you see the cruiser I'm talking about? She has a really cool ship.
I had to pull it up, dude. It is so sweet.
It kind of reminds me of a non-yellow version of Obi-Wan's from episode
one.
Yeah. It's very like pointy.
So try what is it called? Never mind. This is where the fun begins. That was the quote. Yeah, that was the Anakin quote. And one other quick comment. I feel like if they cut all of the scenes where they were in a cantina, the Mandalorian would be like half as long. It's so funny.
It's just where shit goes down, man. Everyone just goes to the cantina.
There's a lot of big scenes in the original trilogy in cantinas. Like, take all the cantina scenes out of Star Wars. I wonder what you have.
Did not Han and Chewie. And Han shot first. I'm just putting that out there.
Yeah. Of course. We are a Han shot first podcast.
Yeah, 100%.
Moving on. This is where we kind of have the clash between Boba and Koska Reeves. But Boba says, we don't need these two. Let's get out of here. Bo-Katan says, you are not a Mandalorian. Bet says, never said I was. And then Koska says, I never knew sidekicks were allowed to talk.
Coming from the like sidekick.
Coming from the sidekick. Like, that really rubbed me the wrong way.
Well, yeah. Isn't it the Quokka calling the stifling slimy?
Easy there, little one. Easy there.
Seriously, Koska Reeves, like that. What the hell are you saying?
Yeah, she had no right. But, you know.
She does kind of redeem herself a little bit.
She does.
So she swings first and Boba Fett easily handles that swing and like pushes her back. And then once they get distance is where like Koska, it's a good fight. I think Koska Reeves holds her ground.
Well,
so.
Even before I think they fight, don't they mention you have to find Moff Gideon's cruiser. And he's like, we have the coordinates, which that blows away Bo-Katan. Cause she's like,
well, that actually happens after, I think. How the fight starts is Bo-Katan says, I've heard your voice 1,000 times.
Right.
And I've killed everyone. And Boba Fett responds with, well, this might be the last voice you ever hear. Mm-hmm. That's when Koska Reeves steps up, does the whole initiating combat. And you're right, B-Toms. Like, I guess it was 50-50, but I wanted more from my boy Boba. I know he's old, but come on.
Yeah, he's going to get some fresh legs here in a Mandalorian. Like,
Koska Reeves and Bo-Katan are also like traditionally trained Mandalorian warriors. Like, they're no slouches. So I would take a stalemate of like a Mandalorian warrior in her prime to a, let's call him a seasoned veteran, Boba Fett.
But
I agree. Boba probably should have.
I really like the part when Koska Reeves uses like her jetpack to like kind of like walk along the wall a little bit. Like, as we've seen the jetpack, I mean, no, for its main purpose to fly, but like in a mini fight like this, it was really cool to see how she utilized that jetpack to her advantage.
Yeah, for being younger, I guess she was quicker, a little bit more mobile. All right, okay.
Yeah,
I'll give it.
So, no, it's funny. I actually fucked up the chronology of how this scene plays out in the first recording too. I don't know why I didn't like do it better this time, but there are a couple little details that I brushed over. They also, when Mando says they have the Moff's coordinates, he also says his light cruiser could help your efforts to retake Mandalore. So that's what he's offering in exchange for that. Their help is the light cruiser itself. And also Boba Fett has a quote saying, Mandalore, you got to be kidding me. The Empire turned that planet to glass. So all we know is that Mandalore is just like a desolate wasteland of a planet, and that's kind of in reference to that. So moving on, and I also wanted to point out, we see throughout this episode a couple like really good leadership qualities of Bo-Katan. Like, she, I like her in the leader role. Like, she breaks down the plan, and she's also the one that calls for order amongst them. Like, you know, says, save it for the imps. Had we shown this much spine in a unified front against them, like, we never would have lost the planet. So I like her as a leader.
Yeah, for sure. Until she starts to get on my bad side towards the end of the episode. Yeah, right. But we'll get there when we get there.
She does mention the Darksaber, is just what I wanted to say. She goes up to Mando and says, you know, the Darksaber is within reach. Like, I will help you, like, with the child.
I got the quote here.
Yeah.
And I want to break it down. So she says, one more thing. Gideon has a weapon that once belonged to me. It is an ancient weapon that can cut through almost anything and cannot cut through pure Beskar. I will kill them off and retake what is rightfully mine. With the Darksaber restored to me, Mandalore will finally be within reach.
And that was, and I like how she said it can cut through almost anything except Beskar steel, because I think we had this conversation in one of the earlier episodes trying to determine whether it could actually cut through Beskar. But so now that we know it here, we can expect Mando to, you know, use the Beskar to his advantage against the Darksaber.
You know what's weird is they didn't have to drop that tidbit until, like, we would have found it later in the fight, and it would have been that much more of a surprise.
Yeah. But
I'm kind of glad.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad.
I think with the almost, that also still would have implied, even if she didn't say the second half of that, I think the almost kind of could for the audience. But still, I agree with you. It could have been a little bit cooler at the time, but I like, it's fine. It's absolutely fine in this position here.
Regardless, Mando says, help me rescue the child and you can have whatever you want. He is my only priority. Such a good dad. Moving on, aboard the Slave One, we have Bo-Katan breaking down the plan.
I actually had a question. Is this the Slave One, or is this, it kind of looks a little bit more spacious. It might be Bo-Katan ship. Or is it actually the ship that they captured, because they do pull up the hologram?
I think it is actually this ship that they, now that you mentioned that I think sense. It is this, because Pershing is right there on the ship with them. So I'm just assuming that they're getting ready to enact their plan here.
Honestly, there's a claim for any of the three ships. I don't think it's Bo-Katan's ship, because they don't use her ship in the plan. They only have the Slave One and the Lambda, but the Lambda shuttle makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes, because they pull up the plans of the hologram and Dr. Pershing kind of walks them through it.
Yeah, yeah. Good point. So Bo-Katan starts briefing them on, you know, the plan that they're going to carry out. She says that at the height of the Empire, it would have had, the light cruiser would have had a crew of several hundred, now just a tiny fraction of that. But Pershing, you know, speaks up and says that her assessment is misleading, because Moff Gideon also has a squad of dark troopers. Mando asks, how many troopers do they have armed in those suits? And this is where we get confirmation that these suits are third generation. So, you know, they're no longer human. They're fully droid. That was the last flaw in the system, is the human aspect to them.
Yeah, he says literally the human inside was the final weakness to be solved. So first gen, we can assume, people were inside. Second gen, maybe droids, but now they're pretty much complete.
Right. He continues saying that they're housed in cold storage in a cargo bay and that they take a few minutes to power up. He then shows them the cell where Grogu is being held under armed guard. And this is where I'm starting to think that Pershing is at least a sympathizer of Grogu's safety, you know, maybe not a full-fledged good guy, but I don't think he feels comfortable doing all the stuff that the Empire is making him do.
I feel like even in season one, you kind of see him like react a little poorly to how they were treating Grogu at the time. So he's a total sympathizer episode. And whether it's for, you know, just scientific purposes, whatever, he at least has a heart, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, look at Rogue One, and he was a scientist who didn't want to work on this death machine for the Empire, but he was basically forced to,
right,
by like threat of death and like killing your family.
That'll make me do anything, really. Yeah. Too.
So I could see Dr. Pershing being like, honestly, a little force under threat to do all this work.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So, but he's definitely helping them in their plan to rescue Grogu. He's like breaking down the ship coordinates and what have you. So Bo-Katan starts getting into the details of how they're actually going to carry out this plan. She says they're going to split into two parties. It's going to be Mando And then, you know, kind of our lady squad. So Bo-Katan, Cosca Reeves, Cara Dune, and Fennec Shand. So phase one is going to be the Lambda shuttle issues a distress call. Phase two, they emergency land in the mouth of the fighter launch tube to cut off the interceptors. You know, the lady squad is going to disembark with quote unquote maximum initiative. Phase three, once the launch bay is cleared, they move to the tandem decks in penetration maneuver. And phase four, once they draw a crowd, Mando can slip through the shadows and grab Grogu. Cara Dune points out that the Dark Troopers will be, quote, a real skank in the scud pie, but Pershing confirms that it is possible to make it to Grogu before the Dark Troopers are even able to deploy. So we're totally not even going to see the Dark Troopers. It's going to be fine.
Yeah, everything's going to be absolutely according to plan.
Yeah. Fennec gives Mando Pershing's code cylinder to seal off the holding bay of the Dark Troopers, and Mando says that they'll meet at the bridge. So that's our plan.
Good plan.
Yeah, it's going to go great.
And we get right into it. It's them launching into hyperspace. The Slave One is chasing after the Lambda shuttle. And they're just playing. They're putting on their game faces here. Mm-hmm. You know, they're pulling off a little acting here.
Bo-Katan and Cara Dune have a conversation where Cara Dune is saying, you know, Moff Gideon.
Oh, true. Yeah.
We need him for his information. We need him alive. We can't kill him. Which Bo-Katan responds with, I don't care what happens to him as long as he surrenders to me.
Which is huge. Now yeah, that you say that, huge going a little bit later into the episode.
Yeah, that's not ominous at all. So the two ships exit hyperspace.
Real quick, sorry.
Go ahead.
Boba Fett has a line in here where he's talking to Bo-Katan over the radio saying, like, power up those shields, princess. I'll put on a good show. And I was like, I like how he called her princess.
Yeah.
That reminded me of Han Solo calling Leia princess.
Yeah. I didn't think of that. It's cool. Good connection there.
Of Finn calling Clark princess in the 100.
Okay.
Ooh. Star Wars stole it from
We cover the 100 as well here on Binge Town.
Yes, we do. But yeah, that is good. I thought of that before the Han Solo thing. So good luck. My fucking guy. So the two ships exit hyperspace right in front of Moff Gideon's light cruiser with Boba Fett in the Slave, you know, quote unquote, firing at the Lambda cruiser. Aboard the light cruiser, comms receives Bo-Katan's distress signal requesting emergency docking.
Giggity.
Nice. Moff Gideon arrives on the bridge and orders the TIE fighters to be launched to intercept. Comms tells the incoming shuttle, who is actually Bo-Katan, to stay clear of the launch tube, which it's part of our plan to clog the launch tube so that TIE fighters can't get out. And I want to say that the TIE fighters that are being sent out of the launch tube to intercept, they look absolutely dope, how they're just being craned out and like shot out the front. That is totally going to be like a simulator ride at Disney World. I'm calling it right now.
I'm upset. I said this on the first recording, but me and my father and my mom, we were all supposed to go to Disney World as a graduation gift for me. I graduated last December from college. Everyone clapped for me. But anyway, I was really excited to go to the Star Wars world, you know, customize my own lightsaber and everything. But COVID hit real hard right as we were about to go. And we had to reschedule it, which kind of sucks. But I could definitely see that being a ride.
Yeah.
Like right out of Disney World. Sorry, I keep wanting to say Universal Studios.
Which we've also been.
Yeah, which is...
And it was dope. We love Universal.
Disney World's cool. Like, even as an adult, Disney World's cool, especially just because of the aesthetics to everything there. The rides, obviously, are a little more childish, but I personally prefer Universal over Disney World. But this might carry it in Disney World's favor. Who knows?
I feel like it would be really fun to take an adult trip to Disney World for... Well, one, I've always wanted to do, what is it called? Like drinking around the world at Epcot.
That
would be so much fun.
I've done
just
that
a day doing. And then also so Star Wars world. Like,
yeah,
I want a lightsaber. Come on.
Yeah. that's the main reason I wanted to go. It's just like, I want my own customized lightsaber. That'd be so fucking
That'd be
cool.
Sweet. So they get two TIE fighters out before Bo-Katan plays chicken with them.
Mm-hmm.
So she's aiming right up to the launch tube. And there's just one guy in charge and on the Imperial cruiser, which pretty much just saved Bo-Katan, because there was another TIE fighter coming out to be launched, and this guy was the only smart one, was like, yo, we got somebody coming, hold up, and stopped it. Could you imagine if Bo-Katan just died?
Everyone dies. Yeah. Everyone dies on the Lambda shuttle.
I guess Mando. Yeah, Mando's hanging out in the back.
Honestly, like, that guy was an idiot for stopping him, because it would have been like one kamikaze TIE fighter who that guy probably died anyway, the pilot of that ship, because they come in and just clear the bay. So like, I don't even know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Like, it was the guy.
He saved our boys and girls.
Yeah.
But I also want to comment on, like, we do get a glimpse of as the Lambda shuttle's entering the landing path.
Yeah.
Of Moff Gideon kind of like, like, this doesn't feel right at all. Like, if they were, you know, in my mind, it was kind of like a look of like, if they weren't acting this way, you know, they could have been a part of the Empire or whatever, but he knows something's up at this point in time, in my mind.
I believe the term you're looking for is he's pooping himself a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He got that hollow of Mando last episode saying you have something. Oh my God. He's so badass. He can't sleep at night.
So Bo-Katan crash lands in the launch tube. And I want to point out that as Boba Fett like peels off, he immediately just eviscerates the two TIE fighters that were chasing him. Like, he was just flying around stalling, and then he just like takes him out and boom, he's gone.
I was going to say that Bo-Katan gave him an order. As soon as we get in the dock, you take off. He was like, all right. He was like, yeah, let me just kill these guys too quick with reverse cannons too.
Yeah.
They were chasing him. Another Batmobile. Yeah. Another Batmobile trick.
So our lady squad emerge from the Lambda shuttle blasting, and immediately they clear the launch bay. Moff Gideon, who can over the comm system hear the screams of his dying troopers, orders his dark troopers to be deployed. And this is where we get our nice little dubstep music playing as these bad boys are booting up.
We were playing a little bit before the podcast started recording. You know, we were trying to get ourselves a little hype.
These are some bad bitches right now. They are some scary people I would not want to be faced with. They have this sweet move where I think it's Reeves does the little grappling hook, wraps somebody up, pulls them towards her, and Bo-Katan uses her jetpack to do a flying knee to the guy's head. As it's just like unbelievably cool.
That's shattering some craniums for sure.
Right there. Yeah, shattering that bitch ass stormtrooper armor.
A nice little get over here.
So once the lady squad takes over the launch bay, we have Mando emerging behind them, you know, so that nobody sees him. They've already moved on. He's just kind of like moving through the shadows. We get our ladies are progressing through the tandem decks, which I think that's the scene that Paul was referencing. They have like a nice little jetpack maneuver where they go out into space and back.
That's not what I was.
No,
there was a scene right when they get off the landing ramp from the Lambda shuttle.
Gotcha. Knock over a stormtrooper into like through the anti-gravity shield, which I really like seeing. Like, it's just a clear with a little bit of blue, like window almost, but it's not actually a window. It's just
like a beam shield.
It's cool. Yeah, it's just cool seeing that in action.
Light bulb just went off my head. Do they call it a Lambda shuttle because it looks like the Lambda symbol?
Does it look like the Lambda symbol?
Yeah.
I don't know what a Lambda.
Oh,
yeah, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, they call like Y-wings,
X-wings, X-wings. Okay. Wow. Just clicked.
Only at Bingetown TV, baby.
Here we go.
But yeah, this is an awesome scene and another way to just show off the Mando's jetpacks. Like we already talked about, they were on the bridge. Like, do this dope ass maneuver where they jump off and it's just Cara Dune and Fennec. And they're like, well, shit, they abandoned us. And then from the back, you get Reeves. Yeah. Reeves and Katan coming back up and blasting the troopers.
I also think it's cool that they can just, their helmets protect them in space. The Mando helmets, right? They would have to.
I'm assuming
No way, because Mando lifts it. I don't think they jump all the way down through that.
Okay.
I think they just jump down a little bit.
Okay.
Makes sense,
but I don't know. Maybe they got upgraded shit. I don't know.
So we got a bunch of smash cuts here of Mando just kind of moving, making his way through the cruiser, still unnoticed. The dark troopers are progressively starting to wake up more and more, and then our lady squad makes slight work of a storage bay. This is where we get like Fennec is dodging blaster shots and stuff, like a lot of hand to hand combat. Fennec's pretty cool. She was showing off her skills in this episode.
She delivers a solid roundhouse kick to some stormtrooper, and then while he's on the ground, just blasts him like three times. Like, thought that was totally badass.
Yeah, her opening episode where she got introduced with, you know, Boba coming in when the child got taken, that shootout scene, I was like, Fennec could really,
she seemed like a sniper. Like, she was doing a lot of like long range work at that.
She was missing, but
yeah,
now she's fucking.
Well, she was also shown as a really good sharpshooter in her season one appearance with Dave's favorite character. Yeah. Toro, what was his name? Toro Calican, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was pretty cool in that. I really like that scene where they're on the speed bikes flying towards her. But I guess she didn't really hit her shots that episode either, because they both lived through that.
Exactly. But she's a badass here.
She's living up to the hype here for sure.
She's dodging blaster shots.
Yeah.
She literally did a Matrix move.
She's killing it. And she's obviously going to be a huge part in the Book of Boba Fett when he gets his spinoff. So I'm looking forward to that, but we'll get to that. So the Dark Troopers, you know, they keep waking up. They're like lined up in marching formation. They look bad. I really love them.
The hoses that just pop off of them after they're ready. It's just intimidating as hell.
It's menacing.
So we get Cara Dune's light machine gun jam. So she just uses it to club several of the troopers. Like, nothing here. Everybody's just making slight work of whoever's in front of them. And then we get Mando passes by the Dark Trooper room just as they're starting to march out, and he quickly puts in the code cylinder to seal the doors, but not before one manages to catch the doors and force himself through.
I love that shot right there of it just prying the doors open, and you just see the dark, or like the red eyes. Just,
bright red eyes.
Yeah, it was so intimidating. Even I was like shivering a little bit. I was like, oh, are they going to get through? What's going to happen?
So the Dark Trooper just immediately punches Mando. He flies back to the far wall and grabs him by the neck and just starts punching his face into the wall. And like, shout out his Beskar armor, because he'd be screwed.
Dude, the wall, this Dark Trooper made the wall look like it was made of styrofoam. Like, he just bent the shit out of it and indented it with Mando's helmet. And literally, I don't know how he doesn't have a concussion.
Literally doesn't even touch the literally Beskar, though, which is awesome. I love how OP the armor is.
If a regular human is taking that punch, their head is just blowing up, right?
Well, like, we see later that they're able to literally punch through blast doors. So,
which, they're unable to punch through the glass.
Yeah, the glass windows.
So shout out this glass manufacturer.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, the Dark Trooper, punches him back to the far wall. The other Dark Troopers, like Paul said, start to punch through the bay doors through the glass. Shout out that glass. And Mando tries to use his flamethrower, the Whistling Birds, on the Dark Trooper, but to no avail. Like, this thing's just taking it head on. And we get a dope shot of this Dark Trooper, like, on fire. It looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And as the Dark Troopers blasters bounce off of him, Mando whips out his Beskar spear and like impales the droid. So the Beskar spear is really the only thing that works on these guys.
When the Dark Trooper was on fire, it was giving me General Grievous vibes right before he died. Mm-hmm. But he didn't die there, so I was a little upset. Yeah. But it made me feel like I was 12 again. And then the first time I watched this scene, I was like, where the hell did that spear come from? Like, I didn't know if he had it on before or after. Rewatching it, you see as Mando's sneaking through all the hallways, he's got the spear over his left shoulder. And when he first gets hit by the Dark Trooper, the spear goes flying.
Yeah.
So he worked his way back to where the spear was. So Mando finishes off the Dark Trooper with the Beskar spear, and he's like, yeah, I'm just going to use this from now on. I mean, he's kind of forced to, because he used everything else against it. But
although we'll get to it, when they're breaking through the blast doors, he has his pistol out and he knows that a blaster does nothing to them.
Yeah. Okay. That's weird.
Which is weird, right?
Yeah. Now that you point that.
And he doesn't tell anybody, like, hey, blasters look great, guys, but like, they don't do a damn thing. You know, useful information.
Yeah, that it's would like, be good for that.
Let me throw a rock at this tank. Yeah. Maybe he'll self-destruct it. But then we get back to the bad bitches.
They're on the elevator.
Yeah. And Cara Dune is just banging this gun on the ground. And I was like, I don't know about future blaster guns, but you probably shouldn't do that with a gun nowadays.
It just shows the struggles of what stormtroopers have to deal with on the regular. Like, if it's just a blaster, like if you're in combat and your blaster just starts clogging for no reason, it's just like, it just is the epitome of stormtrooper equipment.
And there's this one little maneuver where she gets it, she says, like, you know, that'll work, and then she brings the gun barrel over to face the elevator, and Fennec ducks out of the way like, dude, what the fuck, you almost hit me with that thing.
She literally, I think, just slams it on the ground, and then it's like, all right, it's good to go.
Yeah.
And she does throw in a dank ferric when it's clogged.
Oh, so yeah.
Can't skip that. Son of a mud scuffer, too. Yeah, we got
him. Potty mouth over here, yeah. Cara Dune.
She must love the mud.
To her credit, though, when the elevator doors open, she does just completely clear the hallway and the bridge with her LMG. So
all by herself.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, like I said, they take the bridge. They kill everybody in there, take the bridge. Koska Reeves disarms the weapon system, and Bo-Katan immediately questions, where is Moff Gideon? Like, where's this dude at? And we do not have to wait long for the answer, because Mando makes his way to Grogu's cell.
And we did, I think we did actually skip over the scene of Mando, after he beat the Dark Trooper, managed to open the eject, or like open the vat,
depressurized,
yeah,
the cabin.
Exactly, yeah,
so they all get sucked out into space. Yay, Dark Troopers are gone forever. So Mando makes it to Grogu's cell, only to find the Moff holding the Darksaber over Grogu, and we have a lot of quotes here, and
a lot of cooing.
Yeah. So Gideon makes Mando drop his blaster, and then he starts monologuing. He says, mesmerizing, isn't it? Used to belong to Bo-Katan. Yes, I know you've been traveling with Bo-Katan. A friendly piece of advice, assume that I know everything, like the fact that your wrist launcher has fired its one and only salvo. I love that line by Moff Gideon, by the way.
How do you think he knows these things?
I was wondering that too.
Do you think he was like Sherlock Holmes, power of deduction, just like checking out the suit and then could figure it out?
I think that he's super well informed, and we know he has people working for him in different places, like the dude, the mechanic that put the tracker on the Razor Crest.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, what was the last thing? He probably heard about his run-in at the refinery from the Bill Burr episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he probably hears about these things and through the ground. I think he's just very well informed, and he has people planted in
different areas.
Yeah,
that line though, when he says you shot your like one and only salvo, that reminded me of just Clint Eastwood. I know what you're thinking. Did I shoot five shots or six? Like, what do you feel, lucky punk? Like, that's all I could think of.
It's basically that.
But Mando is just like, listen dude, where is this going? And he says, this is where it's going. I'm guessing that Bo-Katan has arrived at the bridge seeking me, or more accurately, this, referencing the Darksaber, but I'm not there. And I imagine they've killed everyone on the bridge, being the murderous savages that they are, and now they're beginning to panic. You see, she wants this. Do you know why? Because it brings power. Whoever wields this sword has the right to lay claim to the Mandalorian throne. And Mando's just like, you keep it. I just want the kid. And this is where we get like one of the cutest coups of the entire series from Grogu. I just love it. I love him. He's the best.
He's just so sad here. And it just makes me so upset.
And then we get Moff Gideon continuing, saying, very well, I've already gotten what I want from him. All I wanted was to study his blood. This child is extremely gifted and has been blessed with rare properties that have the potential to bring order back to the galaxy. I see your bond with him. Take him. But you will leave my ship immediately and we will go our separate ways. Mando steps forward to grab Grogu, and I think we all saw this coming from a mile away. Moff Gideon attacks with the Darksaber, mm-hmm. and this is where we get our fight.
Yeah, does he hit him in the jetpack or like?
I think so, and when I rewatched it, it looked like Mando heard the blade turn on and like moved the jetpack.
I was also just about to say his Beskar staff was like behind the jetpack. So I think he moves his back into position because it probably would have cut through the jetpack. I don't know if it's
the jetpack's Beskar.
Is it Beskar? Okay. Yeah. So then maybe that takes away. I was just going to say his staff was on the back. So maybe he angled it perfectly so that the staff could take the blow. But either way,
then he starts using his badass like wrist gauntlets and guards and blocking them like he did against Ahsoka. So it was really cool that they showed us that earlier in the season, you know, Mando knew how to fight against the lightsaber in nothing but his Beskar, and he brings it back here.
Yeah. And he's taking some chances there, man. There are some gaps in that Beskar, you know, like if he makes one false, you know, precision block, then his arm's getting taken off.
So, and they're still in the cell at this point in time, and he's kind of like retreating into the hallway. And then when there's more space in the hallway, that's when he takes out the spear, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's exactly that.
And they have a really cool, like they just start exchanging blows, and the one highlight I have is like he plants the staff and then he has like a back heel strike, flips it around his
that was
arm
my favorite
to do
move.
A strike. It was just like so cool, so unnecessary.
And
but,
we know our boy Pedro Pascal is with it when it comes
to
stats.
I was going to say, do you think it's actually Pedro Pascal?
Yeah, I think so, because what we saw in Game of Thrones when he's wielding the staff, that was him.
I would say I haven't done research to what extent he does his own stunts, but I would think
He's the one doing it. I mean, like I said, in Game of Thrones, he is clearly the one in Game of Thrones wielding the staff. So I think he, you know, he's still carried that over.
Yeah.
He's familiar with it. Exactly.
We like to believe that it is Pedro under there.
Yeah. And then like they have this clash too, where like the Darksaber is literally like being held against the Beskar staff, and you can see the Beskar staff heating up a little bit. And I was getting a little worried, but obviously Beskar, you know, it's just getting hot. That's all it is. But
also, Moff Gideon has game. Like, I respect how well he fought Mando. That was a really good lightsaber duel, if you want to call it that.
He can really move.
Yeah, he can really move.
But eventually, Mando disarms the Moff, but spares his life. And Moff Gideon looks up, says, "You're sparing my life. Ooh, this should be interesting."
I do also like when he's dragging the Darksaber through the wall, basically, as Mando's like fending him off, essentially. It's just a really cool scene that it's literally slicing through, like, I'm sure feet of steel at that point in time.
And right here, I think Moff Gideon was totally resolving himself to death, and now he's just like, ooh, now I get to see how this all plays out with Bo-Katan. Like, she's gonna be pissed. He knew that dying was still okay because it would screw over Bo-Katan.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking on the rewatch, where he says, "This will be interesting."
That's exactly like, what he's
alluding
to.
Dude, Moff Gideon already knows. He knows the rules of the Darksaber. So he's like, ooh, this will be fun to watch.
Yep.
So we go moving along back to the bridge. Mando enters with Moff Gideon in handcuffs and the Darksaber in his
hand.
And
cool as shit.
Literally, right off the bat, Bo-Katan already knows exactly what went down. But she's like shocked, and she's like, what happened here?
You may be cool, but you'll never be walking into an Imperial bridge deck that you just took over wearing Beskar armor with Moff Gideon in handcuffs, wielding a Darksaber and a Beskar spear on your back.
That Darksaber suits him so well.
Oh, yeah, he is. You're right.
Grogu and Moff Gideon just like, and he is so like modest about it. He totally pulls a Jon Snow. Like, I don't want it. Just looks like a total badass.
He's so cool.
He looks good with that Darksaber in hand, man. That's all I got to say.
It does match the Beskar armor.
Exactly.
It
matches the armor.
Meant to be. So Cara Dune happily says that Mando brought Gideon in alive, noting that, you know, the New Republic's payment will now have to be doubled. Like, she's just happy because she's a New Republic marshal. But Gideon corrects her and says that's not what Bo-Katan's talking about. He says, "Why don't you just kill him now and take it? It's yours now, the Darksaber. It belongs to you." Him talking to Mando. And this is where we get Mando trying to give it to Bo-Katan. "I don't want it. You know, I yield to you in battle," or whatever. But Moff Gideon clarifies. He says, "She can't take it. It must be won in battle. In order for her to wield the Darksaber again, she would have to defeat you in combat." And then he's just like, "Oh, no, it doesn't work like that. Like, you can't just yield. The Darksaber doesn't have power. The story does. Without that blade, she's a pretender to the throne."
I just really love that quote, honestly. Yeah. It's just telling it as it is. I mean, sure, he's like cackling the whole time, being a dick about everything. But
and this is total Mandalorian stubbornness. If there weren't other witnesses around, Bo-Katan probably maybe would have taken it, but him being alive and witnessing this whole thing go down and telling everybody in the room that this is how it's supposed to progress, like the right way, means that Bo-Katan, to save face, has to oblige.
I agree. Like, if it was you're saying if it was literally just those two, and
And maybe she would be too prideful even then to accept it, but
it definitely would have,
definitely now that there's a room full of people that,
especially Reese being
on
right next to her too.
Sure. I got two things to say from this. It's you can make the argument that Bo-Katan is slightly hypocritical, because when she first met Mando, she was like, "Oh, he's one of them, you're a child of the watch," and she basically says, "You follow all these old rituals that have no meaning," and stuff like
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah.
And then here, she's following your dumb ritual that has no meaning. Yeah. So you can make that argument. I don't know. I was like, "Hey, Bo-Katan, just fucking take it."
Yeah. Also, we've been saying that if they are to take back over Mandalore, we would hope that it's kind of like a new era for Mandalore where they're not like stubborn traditionalists. So like, if she wanted to be a leader, she could totally make it a thing that it's not as, you know, what's the word, like savage almost, that this sword has to be won in battle. Yeah. And that's how the new king is chosen.
Yeah, right. Literally grab the Darksaber from Mando. Hey, I have the Darksaber. I'm in charge. I'm making a new rule. Fuck that old shit.
But of course, we needed some issues with our characters. So after a long pause, Bo-Katan's just like, Moff Gideon's right. Like, this is how it has to be. Mando tries to insist, just saying like, dude, just take it. But before we can finish this conversation.
Or a potential fight between the two.
Or a potential fight, exactly. Yeah. Mando would.
You Mando think? Would
win. B-Toms. The other thing I wanted to say, in what is it, the Clone Wars, there's a scene where Bo-Katan is handed the lightsaber, right? Yeah. So just to clear it up, we think why it could happen then is because whoever handed it to Bo-Katan, she didn't defeat the person, she didn't defeat Darth Maul who had it before her. She just found it and picked it up and brought it to Bo-Katan.
Right.
So we think that's what happened there.
Okay. So exactly what, and I do remember this. So Darth Maul's species is from a planet called Dathomir, which is a matriarchal society. There's the men all look like Darth Maul and have the spikes, but there's a sister breed who have their own embodiment of the Force. They don't use it how Jedi or Sith use it. They almost use like dark magic. It almost looks like Scarlet Witch, like,
okay,
but
like the hands, yeah.
It's very like mystical and stuff. Nobody really knows, but they're called the retrieve the Darksaber from the Night Sisters is what they're called, the Night Sisters of Dathomir. And I believe it was Sabine and Ezra's mentor, I'm forgetting his name. Long story short, they go into this Dathomir place and they just kind of stumble across the Darksaber. And I believe they have a run-in with the ghost of the original Mandalorian who had the Darksaber. Point being, it's more Sabine stumbles upon it, does not actually win it for herself. So for right. clarification, yes, Sabine Wren did hand it on a silver platter to Bo-Katan, but Sabine never really won it, so Bo-Katan never really had to win it in combat either. So yes, there is an out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that what you were alluding to?
Exactly. That was incredibly ordered incredibly well.
I did some research because on the first recording, we didn't have that ready to go. So now we got it. So moving on, going back, alarms are going off, yada, yada. And Fennec confirms that the ray shields have been breached and that they're being boarded, but there are no life forms present. We know where this is going. There's at least, I counted 30 dark troopers are showing flying in and landing. The dubstep's blaring like,
love that fucking music.
Yeah, we're gonna have a run-in with these dark troopers. And Moff Gideon chimes in, says, you're about to face off with the dark troopers. You had your hands full with one. Let's see how you do against an entire platoon. And Cara Dune, you know, pushes him to the ground. And this is where he conveniently finds and conceals a blaster. Very important.
Pussy.
Yeah, he total pussy. As the dark troopers march towards the bridge, Mando, you know, sets Grogu down and says, yo, I promise we're gonna make it out of here. Don't worry, little buddy. The dark troopers arrive at the bridge door and begin punching through the blast doors, and inside the squad prepares to fight. And this is where I said, like, they all just have their blasters pointed at the blast shields, and like Mando just does not give them the knowledge that it won't work.
Yeah.
It kind of upsets me the more I talk about it. Like, that's a little bit of a plot hole, but whatever.
He was like, I don't want to crush their spirits too early.
Yeah. So Gideon says, you have an impressive fire team protecting you, but I think we all know after a valiant stand, everyone in this room will be dead but me and the child. And as the door is about to break, a lone X-Wing approaches and lands inside the light cruiser, and we see Grogu perk up a little bit. He takes interest. He's feeling something. And what are our thoughts right when we see this X-Wing?
Honestly, I just thought it was like Cara Dune's platoon kind of coming in to back them up. But when they do clarify that it's only the one, mm-hmm. I know for a fact at this point it's a Jedi. On our first recording, me and Paul were both talking about how embarrassed we were for how long it took us to piece together all the pieces of the puzzle.
Just more confirm, yeah.
Yeah.
Because when you see it coming in, Cara Dune made the comment, oh, it's like, it's only one X-Wing, we're saved, sarcastically.
Yeah.
So I knew it had to be a Jedi, like you were saying, but I was running through a bunch of different names, and I think Luke came up, but I didn't settle on it for too long.
Even when we had, like, podcasted like the episode 7 or whatever it was when Grogu's on the rock, like we listed out a lot of like potential candidates of the Jedi that would answer the call. And Luke wasn't on that list that we had mentioned. We were just kind of spitting names and we had never said it.
Honestly, and it makes so much sense because what we know from the new movies is that somewhere in the timeline that we're in right now, Luke starts a school to teach the new generation of Jedi, you know, after they got wiped out by
Order 66. Had everything accessible to us and we just couldn't put it together.
I didn't want to get to that answer because I didn't want to hype myself up only to be let down. Like I did not think they were gonna give us Luke Skywalker, and they totally did, and it was everything that I could have ever wished for and more, but like we don't know that yet in the episode.
I'm just gonna say the way they built up to it too. I mean, the fact that the dark troopers stopped banging on the blast doors, turned around because they knew there was a bigger threat. Are you kidding me? Like I'm getting chills now thinking about it.
Bo-Katan is the one watching the screen saying it's a Jedi, and on the screens we just see this hooded figure just absolutely destroying dark troopers left and right. Like it's just they are no match for a well-versed Jedi.
And this is what you guys will see in the Clone Wars, is like these Jedis were just weapons of mass destruction in wars. Like they single-handedly won battles and stuff. Like droids have no effect on them. Like any amount of blaster shot going at them does nothing. Like they are just unstoppable forces, and these dark troopers were built up as these, you know, immovable objects, and Luke just comes in and cuts them down like butter.
Just going,
it was amazing to see.
It was so gratifying. And
they do have a really cool reveal. So we see the Jedi through the cameras through the bridge at first. So that's when he pulls out the lightsaber, but it's kind of black and white a little bit. You can't really tell. And then you get the dark troopers on like the bridge with the ray shields beneath, and in comes this hooded figure Jedi, and then you see the green lightsaber cut into the screen, and you're like, that's one more clue.
That's clue number two.
That should have been, at least for me, the point at which I mean maybe his name, like you said, B. Toms, came across my mind at that point in Ezra. Time, but I was like, no. Luke, but in my mind, I was thinking it was going to be Ezra on the X-Wing, which also wouldn't have made sense.
He also has a green lightsaber. Yeah. So that, like,
that's kind of who I was thinking at the time. And then real quick, we get Moff Gideon kind of freaking out, seeing this Jedi just tear apart these dark troopers. He's firing some shots at Bo-Katan, then proceeds to try and shoot baby Grogu, which our boy Daddy Mando is not going to let that fly. And he just jumps in and stops the blast.
Meat shield, dude.
Yeah. Get down, right, Mr. President.
And seriously, even when he's firing these shots, like no one else is shooting him. They're still telling him, drop the fucking blaster. He points it to his head. And thankfully, Cara Dune is able to like kick it away or something like that.
I was thinking about that. And like the reason they just shout and say, like, drop your blaster,
I guess it's because the information.
They do want to keep him
alive. It's like, the information.
He's way better than them alive. And he knows that, too. That's why he tries to kill himself. But
yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Cara Dune will not be having that today.
Nope.
Anyway, we have Grogu. He once again takes interest on the Jedi on the monitor. He's like stroking the screen with his hand.
Baby Yoda, baby.
And on the monitor, we see this Jedi is making his way to the elevator, and he emerges like in the hallway between the elevator and the bridge and just takes out all the remaining dark troopers.
The best part is the very last one he takes out, when he simply only uses the Force to literally just crush it in its place. It was so fucking cool to see it.
And he also had a move, I think before that, he uses the Force to pull a dark trooper to him, and then just, you know, swings like a baseball bat.
Get over here.
It's, dude, again, so cool.
This is like Jedi's done right in this new era of Star Wars. I did not like how the lightsaber battles were portrayed in episodes 7 through 9. A lot of people like the throne room battle. I like hated that scene for whatever reason, because it wasn't lightsaber v lightsaber.
Red Imperial stormtroopers, whatever. Like,
that's fodder, honestly.
That scene actually is notoriously known for being one of the worst choreographed fight scenes ever. Really? Because the troop, like the red guys in the back, who are supposed to be these badass
ninjas, basically
protectors, guardians.
Yeah.
If you pay attention to the ones in the back, it'll be Rey fighting with one on the side, and there's three around her just standing there, just waiting for their buddy to get kicked
out. I was thinking the same. That's how it always is in those kind of group fights when it's like six on one. It's like I always am noticing what the other fucking people are doing when like one person is fighting one on one. It's just like, why don't you just jump in and right now, like, take your chance at striking?
Yeah. There were video game cinematics from whatever year Knights of the Old Republic dropped, which was early 2000s. Mm. And the cinematics from that were better than anything in the new series of movies. Like, mm-hmm. everyone's just like, why can't we just see this? We kind of want Jedi to be a little bit violent, because they are. They're literally using laser beam swords to cut through each other.
I feel like if the Mandalorian flopped, like, I feel like that would be almost the last straw for Star Wars, but it did not. And it literally re-sparked the fires of episodes 7 to 9. Yeah. You know,
I actually have heard that with all these new shows coming out, there was a rumor going around that it will wipe away the new trilogy, 7, 8, 9 as canon. And it wouldn't be canon anymore. I don't know. That's kind of hard to do.
It's hard to do, but like, I think we can all forget about those movies, to be honest. Like, I didn't mind 7 that much. I think 7 was fine, but it just progressively got worse and worse with each movie.
And it's so sour to me. I guess this is relevant because of the character of Luke Skywalker. I think they just had such character assassination in episode 8, the second of the new films. Like, I just hated that he was completely dismissive of his Jedi roots. Mark Hamill, I think I sent this in the Mando chat. He told the director, listen, I like fundamentally disagree with you on every decision you made for the character of Luke, but like, I'm gonna try my best to bring out your image, whatever it is.
Yeah, he did do a good job.
Mark Hamill, the homie,
he's always done a good job.
That was the just tale of the new trilogy, was great acting, or pretty good acting at least, and just bad writing, except for Rose. I hated Rose.
get
Rose out of here.
Yeah, completely.
In the extended universe, I think I said this in one of the earlier episodes, that Finn friend-zoned Rose, like in the comic book series, which is kind of funny. But and they did introduce characters that I loved, like Poe Dameron.
I like Poe. I like
Ace Star Pilot, but I think he's come out with a notorious quote saying that he will never revisit the Star Wars franchise again.
That's sad to see, but
rightfully so. Secured the bag. Now he's like an A-lister and is doing like good stuff. So all power to him. I also liked Rey as a character. She's literally Palpatine's granddaughter. That's cool.
That's cool. I just don't understand like the end. Like, I'm Rey Skywalker.
Yeah.
And why would you bury the lightsabers? Anakin hates sand. You're going to bury his lightsaber in sand? He's just eternally pissed off at you.
It's the little things. And that's why in Mando, we pay attention to those little things.
Okay.
And they pay off, though.
Speaking of little things, so where we're at right now, this Jedi is outside the blaster doors. Mando notices that Grogu, you know, he knows that he's a friend. So he says, open the blasters.
Or open the doors.
Yeah.
But they're all pointing their blasters at the door as if this Jedi is going to be an evil person, even though he just saved them, which, I mean, I guess is a, you know, fight or flight kind of thing. But
I mean, he just massacred everything he saw. So,
yeah. So you don't know if he's coming for everyone.
From Bo-Katan and Koska Reeve standpoint, Mandalorians do not like Jedi.
Yeah, true.
Generally
that is also,
speaking,
yeah.
Mando is kind of a unique exception to the rule. But
This is where it finally fucking clicked with me. So he comes in, and literally 5 seconds before he takes his hood off, you see the lightsaber and the glove. And as soon as I saw the lightsaber, iconic Luke Skywalker lightsaber, the one that Ben Kenobi hands over, it's just so like classic. I don't even know what to say.
No.
And the hand, the one glove, I was like, hey, that's a robot hand.
Yep.
I know that for a fact.
When I saw that this is also for me the moment where I clicked the first time watching that it was Luke Skywalker. And I was just like, how did I not, like you said, B. Thomas, it's just like I didn't want to believe it because I didn't want to be let down. But when it's finally revealed, I'm just like, this is so satisfying.
It was, as far as reveals go, it was, I liked how it was a slow burn over like 5 minutes of them just like kind of spoon feeding us different information to get there. And then it's really only confirmed when he finally reveals himself. So I just really appreciate how they went about doing that.
And Mark Hamill on his Twitter, like, thanks the whole team, the whole Mandalorian team, saying like, you guys did a great job making sure that this information didn't leak. Like, no one in their right mind, at least on the threads that I saw, just didn't really contemplate Luke Skywalker being an option. And kudos to that team for, you know, keeping it such a good secret, because the reveal was just that much more satisfying.
Literally, veteran Star Wars fans, like the one YouTuber, literally cried watching it because he was so, he probably felt like a kid again. This is what we wanted watching the original trilogy. You wanted Luke Skywalker after he was a badass Jedi off doing badass Jedi shit.
And this is him.
And this is it.
And he looks great, by the way, too, with the CGI, like how young he looks and everything. It was just so well done.
I think that's why I never thought Luke Skywalker would be in this, because Mark Hamill's old. And, you know, I forgot about CGI and how good it is.
Yeah, that's exactly my thoughts, too, is that seeing Luke Skywalker in the new movie, seeing how old he is, it's just like, can he still fill this role of being a Jedi, which CGI says, yes, he can.
So after he removes the hood, we get the reveal. It is indeed Luke Skywalker, and his theme begins to play in the background, and Grogu peeks out from behind his chair and it's just like, hey, what's up, dude?
Oh, you answered my call. Yeah. Thanks.
Mando asked the ridiculous question, are you a Jedi? I am.
It's like, well, like, you have to remember, Jedi are an endangered species, should we call it. They're so rare, and nobody, like, it's been knows decades really since they were ingrained in culture, so nobody really knows what their deal is. And when you stumble across someone with a lightsaber, your first thought isn't Jedi, it's like, who's this guy with a lightsaber? Is he a rogue? Like, is he dangerous? So you got it confirmed, are you a Jedi? He says,
yes. I am.
Yeah. And Grogu's like cooing a little bit in dissatisfaction. Mando's like, I don't think he wants to go with you. And Luke says, he wants your permission. He is strong with the Force, but talent without training is nothing. I will give my life to protect the child, but he will not be safe until he masters his abilities.
And so the school is founded with baby Grogu being the first.
Nah, do you think he's the first? There could be plenty.
There could be others. But
see, now that's something. All of the spinoff series are not about any of like our titular characters like Luke or Leia or Han. We have a Lando one, but he's kind of like more of a secondary. So what? I just want to know. I want a series about Luke in this time span between taking down the Empire and like dealing with the remnants of the Empire and him becoming a hermit. Like, I want that. Maybe like a Luke Jedi school series.
People might say that it'd just be too much Luke Skywalker, but it's like, it's so important that we get that information, especially with Kylo Ren, you know, wiping out that school and everything. Like, it's just all relevant to the story. So I'm all in for that. That'd be amazing.
The most heartbreaking scene in Mandalorian so far. He goes over, picks up Baby Grogu. Baby Grogu and says, like, you know, come on, it's okay. Go with them. And the little hand reaching out and stroking his helmet. And what does Mando do? He lifts it up so he can look at baby Grogu with his own eyes.
And we see that beautiful face of Pedro Pascal.
Yeah, only the third time we see it the whole series. And we only saw his face one time in season one, twice in season two. So I think he's warming up to the idea of other people seeing it.
I've seen his chin three times in season two.
Oh, true.
Two,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
He did take a sip.
Yeah.
And this totally reminded me of Return of the Jedi, where Darth Vader is dying and says to Luke, for one last time, let me look upon you with my own eyes. And this is totally what that was.
For sure.
All he wanted to do was make sure baby Grogu didn't forget his face.
And Grogu like strokes his cheek. It's like, it's a very touching scene. Like, it was sad. We were building up this relationship for the past two seasons. And unfortunately, it seems like Grogu is on his way out of the Mandalorian's life,
which we did not call. We were saying that we were going to get Grogu back to his own people, like end of season three, maybe four. It's sad to see him go this early.
Yep, and then we see R2-D2 pop around the corner. And
That was so cute, because baby Grogu was holding on to Mando's leg, didn't want to go, and then R2-D2 was like, oh, hey, what's up?
And he does that classic baby Grogu, like, strut over to R2-D2.
Yeah, I love it so much.
It's the best, without a doubt.
And what a pair that is, R2-D2 and Grogu.
Dude, they were, like, talking. Like, R2-D2's beeping around, and Grogu's just cooing, and then R2-D2 gets excited, like he's jumping up and down a little bit. It was such a heartwarming moment for sure.
Heartbreaking.
Well, and heartbreaking at the same time, because we'd only get to see baby Grogu for a little bit.
And Grogu like reaches up at Luke. It does that thing like, pick me up, dude. Yeah. I can't make it all the way to the elevator by myself. You got an hour to wait. So Luke picks him up and Luke says, may the Force be with you. And he's out. He leaves this I love this image of him in the elevator holding Grogu with R2-D2 at his side. And he's in and he's out. That's
two,
it.
Three now iconic characters, you know, just right at the elevator. And our boy Mando just is so devastated to see baby.
Tears in his eyes. Not falling down his cheek, just in his eyes.
His eyes are watering up a little bit. The dam's about to break.
Roll credits. And that is our episode. But is it really? Because we have a post-credit scene that is setting up our Boba Fett, the Book of Boba Fett spinoff, which I actually think they released this information in the episode. I don't think this Book of Boba Fett project was announced at when they announced everything else.
Oh, really? I
think so. It was only a week gap between the two, but I don't think
I can see why they didn't do it, just to give the people here. They pulled a Marvel on us, you know, stay for after the credits.
Chilling to the opening after credit scene was just the two moons and then pans over to sand and Jabba's palace. You're like, holy shit, they're on Tatooine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Boba.
Yeah, we get
we'll get there.
We all think it's Jabba's old major domo, just kind of like the day-to-day guy.
He's fat now.
Yeah, Bib Fortuna been just munching, I guess. I don't know. He's tough.
He's on that Jabba the Hutt diet.
Yeah,
honestly, he probably was.
So, and he's assuming the throne. Obviously, Jabba's dead, but he is assuming the throne at the palace on Tatooine. And, you know, we hear some blaster fire upstairs. He sends some guards to investigate, more blaster fire. And we have Fennec strolling down, followed by Boba Fett himself. And Bib doesn't last long.
Nope. We get a little Boba. It's just like he's trying to get it, weasel his way. Like, actually, it's Fennec who comes down first. And she's killing all the guards around Bib Fortuna.
And then the slave.
There's the iconic slave that almost looks identical to the one that Jabba had.
For me.
So, but she, you know, rescues her, shoots the shackles on her wrists or ankle, whatever it is. She flees off, and then we get Boba dropping down the stairs, and then the Boba comes in, and he's just like, "How you been? All this stuff.
I thought you were dead, man. So good to see you. I heard so many rumors." Bop.
Yeah, Boba did not give a fuck about this guy at all. And then we get the classic. He just throws this fat ass off the throne. Fennec grabs a drink from behind. Boba places his ass in that seat on the throne, and cue the second part of the credits,
seriously. Man. Dude, that what? Talking about badass images to end the season, we like Luke in the elevator and Boba and Fennec just sipping that shpachka on the armchair.
Spachka. I was going to ask what the name of the drink is.
So it's, dude. So
and cool. Then we get the Book of Boba. What was it? December 2021 or something
December
like that?
December 2021. So that's coming out at the tail end of this year. And I'm excited for that.
I mean, he's basically going to be king of the underworld now, right?
Yeah, we don't know. We were trying to think of things
like that, but he's not going to be like I don't really know what Boba's intentions are, but I have to imagine he's going to be a better king of the underworld than Jabba was, or a more just one.
Yeah.
Do you think? No.
Yes.
No. Is Han? Yeah, Han is still alive.
Yeah, Han is 100% alive.
He's probably
we did mention this on the first run through. It's so, like he could have a vengeance against Han.
Yeah, you know, Han threw me in that goddamn Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, so we could get some Han.
And they already have an actor to play Han.
Yeah, they do.
I thought he did a great job in Solo. I actually enjoyed Solo a lot.
Solo was actually really good. Of the newer movies, like I liked Rogue One too.
But I have yet to see Solo actually.
What?
Really? I gotta see that.
It was actually
how is Donald Glover as Lando? Because and that Beast. Brings us to there's a Lando. I think it's a show or a film coming out, and nobody knows if they're gonna have Donald Glover as young Lando or have Billy Dee reprise his role as older Lando from like the newer films.
Either way, I think I'd be fine with both, because I think Donald Glover did a phenomenal job as Lando. So
he did a badass
job.
Dude, you gotta watch Solo. It's so good.
I will watch Solo when you two watch the pilot episode of the Clone Wars.
And we had mentioned this too, not on this podcast, but it's like now that we have all this new Star Wars stuff and everything is at this point, like we still have to get through Emperor Thrawn like as a villain for Mando. So it's like we definitely have to watch the Clone Wars and Rebels.
I think that Thrawn and Ahsoka were just introduced to us in The Mandalorian, and I don't think that's going to be a major plot moving forward. It could,
in The Mandalorian,
it could just be an intertwined thing, but there's an Ahsoka show coming out, and I think Thrawn is going to be the big bad of that show. Like, her whole focus, and I've touched on this before, is Thrawn and Ezra both kind of disappeared together. So she is on I think the route they're going to go is that her simultaneous quest, Ahsoka, is going to be locating Ezra, but at the same time taking down Thrawn. And it could kind of be two birds with one stone, because at the end of the Rebels animated series, she was on just a manhunt for Ezra. She wanted to locate this guy.
Mm-hmm. So do you think Bo-Katan is going to be in Ahsoka's show? There's a high possibility, because they're clashing with Thrawn.
I think we're gearing up for an MCU universe type thing where everybody's mixing with everybody, and I'm completely for it. We have a Rangers of the New Republic show coming out. Cara Dune's totally going to be in that. We have a Rogue Squadron movie, which I think is just about like a squad of New Republic X-Wing fighters, and that's going to be awesome based on a video game.
It was the Bad Batch is what they're called, right?
Two different things. So the Bad Batch is, and that was actually introduced in the final season of the Clone Wars. That's going to be an awesome spin-off series of their own. It's the Bad Batch is these genetically enhanced clones who each kind of have a special ability, and they're just like a group of outcasts that are just an awesome troop of clones.
And they have like their own personalities and stuff, right?
Yeah. That's going to be a great show. And when you guys watch the Clone Wars, the final season of the Clone Wars, oh my God, that has so much seeds planted for the Mandalorian season two. So it's all intertwined, and I'm really excited for the future of this franchise.
I said it earlier, the Mandalorian really rekindled my fire to the Star Wars franchise, because like you said, B-Tons, like those new movies just weren't it. And
well, you guys like Solo and Rogue One were it, and like I've been saying, like we knew what Disney was,
at least the trilogy. I really enjoyed Rogue One and I really enjoyed Solo, so but then we got those new movies and then everything kind of flopped for me. It's like, what is this franchise even becoming? But this Mandalorian has been amazing, so I'm without a doubt with watching Clone Wars and Rebels, there's not a hesitation for me.
Then stop hesitating.
But
we talked about Boba and what Boba. We think Book of Boba is going to be about. I guess we talked a little bit about Mando, but what do you guys think Mando Season 3 is going to start out with? Back to the Solo adventures?
I think Mando Season 3 is going to pick up literally on the bridge of this light cruiser, and Bo-Katan and Mando have a conversation ahead of them, I think.
About
where is this Darksaber going?
I really want to see at least a peaceful fight. I don't even know if you can call it that. Maybe of one of mutual respect for each other. But yeah, when they were about to fight on the bridge, it seemed like it was going to be a bout of hatred, at least from Bo-Katan's side, just being pissed that Mando now has a sword. But I hope that, you know, they can become at least friends to a point where they can be like, all right, let's have a showdown and let me win this thing for real.
Yeah, I hope it's, well, even if it's not staged to let Bo-Katan win, I would
even
love
if Mando
to see
gets
them
the
sparring wheel, at 100% against each other and them accepting whatever it turns out to be. And if Bo-Katan wins, then she gets to lead Mandalore. If Mando wins, then maybe he just continues being a space cowboy, but now he has a darksaber.
Yeah, I really don't
no complaints.
I really don't know what to expect from any, like, honestly, any of these shows. So I'm excited to see what they do with all this information that they've been giving us.
The two things that I'm hoping we get, I'm not saying we probably will, because we most likely won't, is seeing Mandalore. It would be cool to actually see Mandalore. And also, I would be down for like a 10-year time skip, like the ghost forward and baby Grogu is now, you know, a little bit older.
Speak a little bit.
Yeah.
Time skip only be to accommodate an older baby Grogu.
Yeah. And I just see a badass
Yoda,
like teenager Grogu, like fucking shit up using like the Force now.
Yeah.
There's so many good fan art pieces out there of like older Grogu being looking like floating Yoda, master of the Force, with the Mandalorian ball on his.
I saw one with Grogu fully clad in Beskar armor wielding the darksaber. It's so cool. Star Wars fan art is dope. I saw one where
it's all over my Instagram page. Like, it's that and anime shit is like that, and I love it. I absolutely love
there's
it.
There's like a famous series of like paintings of cottages, and some dude just came in and put Imperial light cruisers like in the sky behind them.
I did see that.
And they look dope.
It does.
Dave, you have our last segment, right?
Yeah. So guys, we've never done it before on this specific podcast series. But you guys are about to be hit with a Bang Hill Mary. It's something we try to do at the end of most of our podcast episodes, but we haven't been introduced to too many characters to the point where we could do one. but now we can.
I think a once per season is good for the Ben Kill Mary.
Yeah, it was good. So now we have our three female characters. We're going to have to decide between Fennec, Bo-Katan, and Cara Dune. And let me just start with, I'm marrying Cara Dune without a doubt. She is waifu material, 100%. She's got the goods. She'll protect you when in need. This is where it gets a little hard for me. I think what I'm going to do is kill Bo-Katan. And then, yeah, fuck Fennec, because she's just a badass. And she's that bad girl, you know. I think she would be a great one-night stand. But I think I have to kill Bo-Katan because she's too strict. She's a little too, like... Maybe you could open her up with some sex, but I don't think so for me.
Dude, I think I agree with you. I'm going to have to kill Bo-Katan. I feel like she would just order me around too much.
Yeah.
Get on top.
She's a, yeah.
Get on your knee.
She would peg you.
Turn around.
She would peg you.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm going to have to kill Bo-Katan.
Cara Dune might peg you too, though.
I think I'm going to have to bang Cara Dune and marry Fennec because, like you said, Cara Dune will protect you, Fennec will protect me. And actually, I take everything back. I take everything back. I'm going to kill Fennec because she's got robotic lady bits. Okay. That
is it confirmed that the lady bits are robotic?
I'm not taking that chance.
I feel like for the purposes of Bang Kill Mary, it is assumed that those parts are human.
Well, I don't want to
I'm just assuming the stomach is all robotic. So no kids there. So that's kind of a plus right there.
I don't know. I
want to stick. We're still young. I'm definitely going to have kids, but right now I'm not dealing with that.
I don't want my junk in there and then I get zapped. That's all I'm saying. So I'm probably going to kill Fennec, bang Bo-Katan, and then marry Cara Dune.
What is it? An archer? Archer bangs a fucking cyborg in it.
Yeah, but her vagina is in the sink.
Yeah, but it's a real pussy. It's a real pussy still.
So, for my two cents on the Bang Kill Mary, I'm also going to kill Bo-Katan only because, like, she's too cold and has this steely demeanor, and she's a Mandalorian. You know, I wouldn't want to marry a Mandalorian just because they are cold and emotionless.
Savage.
And warriors. Yeah.
Murderous savages.
And this is where it gets kind of tricky. And I think I'm going to marry Fennec because she's shown that she has a little bit of, like, I don't know, an edgy personality. Now that she's a good guy, like, she's, I don't know, she's sarcastic and, like, has these quips.
She's got a great smile.
She
got
don't miss.
Smile. Yeah, she don't
know
miss.
What I'm talking about. And then... Yeah, I'll bang Cara Dune. And it's more that I don't want to marry her because that would be like marrying a cop, you know, which isn't a bad thing. You know, it's
you're
like she
cases.
Would protect you. But at the same time, it's just like she'd be so strict. Like,
yeah, she
I don't know. Like, are you following New Republic procedures, Brian? Like, I don't know, Cara.
What are you going to bust some underage Spashka drinkers or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, among other things. So, yeah. Mary Fennec,
I'm happy with
Cara
that.
Dune, kill Bo-Katan.
I'm glad we got
this. That was a really good one for Man Kill Mary.
I'm glad we got this segment in because it was very missed for us at least.
All right, last one. Grogu, Frog Lady, and the spider from episode 2. Can't even...
I'm just going to not even respond.
I'm glad that Frog Lady was not in the Bang Kill.
She would get the axe behind
Bo-Katan.
Then Bo-Katan.
It would have been way harder.
Yeah, dude.
I don't know. I mean, last thing I have to say is I'm really excited.
Oh, ratings.
Oh, yeah. 10 out of 10 for this episode.
10 out of 10.
Hell yeah, 10 out of 10.
It's funny because I was getting not like shit on by you guys. It was more like, oh, you're not going to give this episode a 10. And I was like, I'm just being real here, man. Like the episodes, I foresaw, you know, these episodes being great and that's what they were. So I'm more than happy to give this episode a 10 out of 10 in every way.
And this got a 9.9. like perfect rating.
Might as well just
IMDb.
Give him the 10 at that point in time. What the fuck?
I think it only goes to 9.9.
Oh, okay,
it's one of those
okay.
weird things like okay. you can't get a perfect 10 in gymnastics in the Olympics because like literally nobody
no
ever
is
gets
perfect.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
You ever hear of that? Someone got a perfect 10 and it only showed 1.0. Like broke the system because it can't do 10.
That's
know.
Insane.
But yeah, this is highly regarded. Everybody loved this, like casual fans, passionate fans. It was an awesome episode. It was done perfectly and it just got me so excited for season 3 and the rest of these projects that Disney is rolling out in the Star Wars universe, guys.
Preach.
Anything else?
No,
I just want to say I love Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni and thank you for all you've done and please don't stop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Honestly, preach. This is the way. keep an eye out for continued coverage or non-continued coverage of The Mandalorian, because the season's over. We're going to definitely be picking it up in season 3, and I'm sure we're going to be exploring the other projects as they come out. We also cover different shows like The Boys, Carnival Row, The 100, You Get the Gist. And as always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thanks for listening.
And may the force be with you. Thought you were going to go with that. I was trying to sync it up with you.